You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So, if you've read the Bible much, you're probably like, I don't think it says anything about dating Ryan. And you're correct. There's nothing at all that it says directly about dating. Why? Because dating is weird, according to history. It's actually something that didn't really exist until a couple of hundred years ago. We're the weird ones. Anything else seems weird to us now, and that's understandable. But the concept of dating is only a couple of hundred years old. And the old school ways, you know, it was like arranged marriages and, you know, all that stuff that sounds horrible. And in no way am I advocating for a return to those things. However, the Bible has a lot to say about relationships, a lot of principles about love. And I think the book of Ruth is unique in the sense of it has the most detailed explanation or description of what we would call courtship, of a man and a woman getting to know each other, getting involved in each other's lives, and eventually getting married. It has a level of detail on that situation that no other place in the Bible really does. And so I think it's super helpful to look at it from that perspective. In addition to that, there's a wealth of great principles in the Bible about relationships, all kinds of relationships, principles that apply to every relationship. And at the heart of that is just the concept, the idea of sacrificial love. And that can be applied, according to the Bible, considering that the needs of others is more important than yourself. That can and should be applied to all of our relationships. So let's get into the book of Ruth. The setting for the book of Ruth is the time of the judges. If you're not familiar with your Israel history, that's okay. But it is kind of a dark time in the period of Israel's history. They've come out of Egypt. They've established their own nation. But they're kind of moving along, and a big theme of the book of Judges is everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. Everybody's just sort of deciding what's right and wrong, and there's not really strong leadership. The people are falling away. They're getting into all kinds of idol worship and despicable practices like the worship of Baal, which involved infant sacrifice, things that really pissed God off. And so we start in that period in Israel's history, and we get to Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, and it says, "Now it came about in the days of the judges that there was a famine in the land." So people are starving. You know, this is an agrarian society. Almost everybody's a farmer. And a drought would be something that would be an incredible hardship on an entire population. And the people as a whole are away from God. They're doing what's right in their own eyes. It's a bad time. And we read on and it says, "A certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites," which just means that they were members of the tribe of Ephraim, "of Bethlehem in Judah." So it just gives us a little snapshot into the family life of some Jewish people living in Israel, in Judah, in the time of Judges, during a famine. And it says that they decided to go to the land of Moab. So if you look at your geography, Jerusalem's up here, then you have Bethlehem, then you have this kind of large barrier of the Dead Sea. On the other side of the Dead Sea is the land of Moab. It says they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Background on Moab, it's the descendants of Lot's son, Moab. They had a contentious relationship with the Israelites. There was sort of a love-hate relationship. They were sort of distantly related, but they were near neighbors, and they had very different religious sensitivities. You know, everybody always thinks their God is the God, and they're fighting with each other. They're having tension with each other. Moab had widespread occult practices, which Israel disdained, except for they were doing them themselves during this time. And so there's tension here. And Jews were not supposed to intermarry with Moabites because God was trying to establish Israel as a nation that would be his representatives to the rest of the world. And they were supposed to spread Judaism to the world, not take on the cult religions of everyone else. And so we read in verse 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her two sons, and they took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. So, you know, Naomi and her son and her husband Elimelech, they flee Israel, the chosen people of God, the chosen nation of Israel, because of a famine. They go to Moab, where there's this sort of tension. They arrive there. They have sons. Their sons get married, but her husband drops dead. Then both Mahlon and Chilion, their sons, died. And the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. So we see at this point in the narrative, Naomi is the main character of the book of Ruth right now. And she is having a really hard time. There is extreme difficulty and hardship happening in her life. She went from Israel to Moab, and things went no better in Moab. You know, why all these people are dropping dead? You know, it's probably that the famine was affecting them too. And it's hard for us to understand and imagine in our modern context, you know, what a challenge, obviously we understand losing your husband would be one of the most terrible things that could happen. Losing your children would be one of the only things that could be worse than that. And Naomi is experiencing this on one on top of the other, and you're left with Naomi and her two Moabite daughter-in-laws in a time where it is very difficult to be a woman. Not just in Israel, in the ancient world as a whole, but in this region in particular, it was very difficult. Women had very few rights. They were almost never educated, and their ability to do things like own property or create a business were extremely limited. They were totally dependent on husbands, fathers, and sons for there to be any enterprising sense of family income. And so for these three women to be bereft of their husbands and left alone to find their own way puts them in an extremely desperate situation. Culturally, their only options really during this time would be to get married, to find another husband, to starve, to become prostitutes, or to beg on the streets. And so it's a very, very serious situation. They're probably still in the middle of a drought. I mean, the husbands and the sons have dropped dead for a reason. It's a difficult time. Naomi is in a foreign land, and she's got these two younger women who were married to her sons who are now in the same situation that she's in. So we read in verse 7 that she departed from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. So Naomi's like, screw this, we're going home. And her daughters-in-law are like, cool, we'll go too. And Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, listen, you guys should return each to your mother's house. Don't go with me to Judah. You should go back to your families. There's hope for you here. If you come with me into Israel, you'll have no family there at all but me, and I don't have any family there at all. Your best prospects are probably to stay with your own people. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. She's saying, listen, your wonderful daughters-in-law, you know, you were so good to my husband. I'm so moved that you would want to come with me, but you should stay. And may the Lord grant that you find rest each in the house of her husband. I want you guys to get remarried. There's still hope for you. There's still time for you. And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. Just a terrible, tragic dynamic in these women's lives. And it says, the daughters-in-law said back to her, no, but we will surely return with you to your people. We want to go with you, Mom. And she says, listen, return, and why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? And you see the dynamic. There you get a little piece of, like, you know, in Naomi's own mind, the only thing of value she has is to be able to create more husbands for them to marry. And she's like, I'm too old. So the situation of women here is terrible. And she's like, I can't provide for you. Honestly, she's probably thinking some about, you know, it'll be easier for her if they stay behind, because that's two less mouths to feed. Return, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. Every move I've made has been wrong, and God is punishing me. God is judging me, is her perspective. She's like, you guys should get far from me. Go find husbands. I'm too old to have children. I'm too old to be remarried. Just go back and be with your families. She's trying to give them a chance. And in the framework of best odds for survival, this makes a certain amount of sense. And so they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And they said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. So I think, too, we begin to get an idea of how serious Naomi is about following the Lord. First of all, she fled Israel in the middle of a famine and went to Moab. Secondly, her sons married Moabite women, which they weren't supposed to do. Thirdly, when they want to stay with her and maybe go back to the land of Israel, she says, no, go back and worship Baal. Go back to your gods. Go back to your people. You don't want to come to Israel. They won't like you there very much. Stay here. So I think we can begin to put together sort of a caricature, a framework of what is Naomi all about, right? She is being strategic. She's being smart. She believes God is punishing her through these terrible circumstances, which is debatable, but that's what she believes. She's encouraging them to return to their people and their gods. So we could lay out, like, what is Naomi's thinking here? How is she processing this? What are the order of priorities for her? And it is survival, family, God's ways. Which is the way that I think we would naturally prioritize pretty much anything. Right? I think a lot of people would read that and they would be like, that's what it should be. Anything else would be weird. This is Naomi's thought process. This is what has led her to leave Israel, to do the things that she's done. And it's also what's led her to be in a situation where her husband and her sons are dead and she doesn't know what she's going to do. In verse 16, we read, but Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God will be my God. She says, I have a different way of viewing this, Mom. We're in this together. I believe in your God. I am not returning to the God of my people. I am with you. We are together. We are going to fight this out. And the God that you think has cursed you is going to be a part of our redemption. So Ruth, same exact circumstances as Naomi. Husband's dead, doesn't know what she's going to do, doesn't know where to go. She's being strategic, but in a different way. Her priorities are God's way, family, survival. I mean, if you really think about it, Ruth would be better off without Naomi. She's young. She's attractive. You know, when I say that people in this time were getting married around 13, 14 years old, okay? So Naomi is probably somewhere between 23 and 26 and a widow. No kids. She's got prospects. Now, if she brings her previous husband's mother-in-law in tow, and whoever wants to marry her also has to take care of Naomi. That's a detriment. And Naomi does, and Ruth doesn't care. She says, I'm with you. We are family. This is about God. This is about family. And it's about survival. She has a totally different perspective. So, we read on in verse 19. Naomi and Ruth both went until they came to the land of Bethlehem, where Naomi was from. And when they came to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. Remember, we think about this like Bethlehem probably had a few thousand people, right, living in it, right? It was like the size of a lot of the high schools you guys went to, right? And Naomi, who's been gone for over 10 years, shows up with Ruth, and everybody's like, oh, Naomi, you're back. Everybody's freaking out. They're celebrating. Is this Naomi? And she says to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. And again, this is kind of lost on us because there's something within the original Hebrew that makes a lot more sense. The name Naomi in Hebrew means lovely. And they're like, lovely, you're back. And she's like, don't call me lovely. Call me bitter. If your name's Mara, I'm sorry, but your name means bitter in Hebrew. She's like, I'm not lovely, I'm bitter. Because God has dealt bitterly with me. And so we get into, again, the mindset of Naomi and her circumstances and the difficulties. You know, everybody's celebrating and they're glad to have her back. And she's like, my life is screwed. I am in pain. I am coming back with nothing. I don't even have a house to live in, food to put on my table. She's thinking about, you know, how are they going to survive? So we get to chapter 2, and we read, they're in Israel now, and Ruth the Moabitess says to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, after one in whose sight I might find favor. And Naomi said to her, go, go, my daughter. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Now again, this is lost on us unless we know something about the Old Testament, unless we know something about agrarian society, Middle Eastern society. But she's like, I'm going to go pick some grain from a stranger's field. And says she happened to come upon a portion of land belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now remember, Elimelech was Naomi's husband. And so this guy Boaz is a farmer, and Ruth's going along, and she's like looking, you know, where can I pick some grain from a farmer's field so we don't starve to death? And what's happening here is this is actually legal. This isn't wrong. This isn't stealing. According to Jewish law, according to the God of the Bible, the way he set up the nation of Israel was they had a program for government assistance for the poor. And that program was farmers, he said, don't harvest the outer borders of your field. Leave that for the poor. So they can come, they can have easy access. If they're desperate and they need food, every field is supposed to not have the outer edge picked from. That's there for the poor, and it's a way of honoring God and honoring the poor. You can find it, that law, in Leviticus 23:22. It says, when you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap the very corners of your field, nor gather the gleaning of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am the Lord your God. So this tells us two things. One, God cares about the poor. And two, Boaz, a relative of Elimelech, believes in God. This is not something that everybody did. It was a law. It was put there. And you can imagine from the farmer's perspective, like you want to maximize the yield on the plot of land that you have. And so leaving parts of your field unharvested for the poor would be annoying if you hate the poor and you're greedy. But Boaz loves God and he wants to follow the law of God. So he does this. And Ruth doesn't know it, but she just stumbled upon a distant relative of Naomi's husband, who's a godly man, and she's picking wheat from their field like she's supposed to in order not to starve. Boaz, we'll see, was older, he was wealthy, he was respected, and he loves God. He's also single. And he's sitting on his porch in his rocking chair, you know, sipping some tea and looking out, and this hot young girl is picking on the outer edges. And he's like, ooh, that's interesting. She's cute. And she's in need. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't be out there doing this if you weren't in a desperate situation. And what he does is he shows her great kindness. He says, listen, this isn't enough. Let me get you some more food. You know, you can be here. I will give instructions to my people to make sure that you're protected, that no one bothers you. He says, Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to the people that you did not previously know. You see, Ruth made some good choices. Ruth decided to stick with her family. She decided to honor her mother-in-law. She decided to be a part of the solution, and she decided to follow the God of Israel. A Moabitess, who they're supposed to be at odds with, has shown more faith and more loyalty to the word of God than a lot of Israelites. And people are talking. They're like, did you hear Naomi's back? And they're like, Naomi's back? And she's saying we should call her bitter because she's pissed. And there's this cute young girl, Ruth, that's with her that apparently forsook the Moabite God, stuck with her mother-in-law, and is helping her survive. And people are like, that's pretty cool. That's God's way. Here is a woman, not born in Israel, not born into the faith, being a demonstration of the faith in a way that guys like Boaz are looking at and they're being like, I heard about you. You're very interesting. Ruth was choosing God's way, and things were beginning to change in terms of the fortune of their family. So Boaz says to her, may the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. And it's sort of this beautiful picture of like, you know, you have chosen the God of the Bible. And it doesn't mean that you won't suffer. It doesn't mean that, you know, all of your problems are solved. It doesn't mean any of that. But you have sought refuge under the wings of God. And he is going to show you that is the right choice. And so the reputation of the things that she's done that were not necessarily strategic from a worldly standpoint, but that are strategic from a spiritual standpoint, that's the reputation she's building for herself among the community of God. And Boaz, even though he's the one giving her the food and he's the one telling his men to protect her, is pointing her not to himself. I'll protect you, young lady. He's pointing her to God. He's saying the way that you are trusting God is going to work out for you. Continue to do that. So for months, Ruth and Naomi were well taken care of. They had protection. They had food. You know, things that they didn't have in Moab, and they didn't know that they would find in Israel. Everything's going pretty well, but then what's happening is the harvest is coming to an end, right? Plants, crops grow in seasons. When the season ends, you can't glean from the edges of the field anymore. And Ruth and Naomi are looking at the situation, and they're like, we're using this to survive. What are we going to do in a couple weeks where there's no more harvest? And Naomi has an idea. We get to chapter 3, and Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, says to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now, is not Boaz our kinsman, which just means sort of distant relative, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. So it's the end of the season, it's the end of the harvest, and what would happen is you would take all the harvest that you'd gotten together, and you would thresh it, which would mean you would take a pitchfork and throw it up in the air, and the chaff would fall away, and what would be left would be the part that you want to grind up and make flour with. And all the people would come together and do this together. So she knows it's the end of the season. Boaz is going to be down at the threshing floor tonight, and I've got some advice for you, my dear girl Ruth. She says, wash yourself, take a real good bath, put on your best perfume, and you know that little outfit, the one piece that shows some cleavage? Put that on too. Go down to the threshing floor where you know he'll be, but be cool. Hide in the shadows, don't make yourself known. Don't just walk in there and be like, Boaz, what are you doing here? No. Wait until he's finished eating and he's got some wine in him. You can see Naomi. She's slick. And then when he goes to lie down, here's what you should do. Mark where he's sleeping. And then, in the cover of night, sneak over there, smelling good and looking pretty. Lay down at his feet, and he'll tell you what to do. Naomi is looking out for some security, right? Naomi is still operating under the same premise. Security, family, then God's ways. And she's like, I want you to take your moneymaker and go down there and show him that he wants you and do to him or for him whatever he says. Survival, family, God's ways makes all the sense in the world if there is no God. This is man's way, not God's way. Now, in Naomi's defense, they're desperate. They're looking at starvation. And Naomi knows that she's not going to attract Boaz, but Ruth could. The formula is Ruth is hot plus they want security equals sex. That's the formula for Ruth that Naomi is suggesting here. And it's horrible that women in the ancient world were put in a position where this was one of the only advantages that they had. But that's the plan. Why not use the one advantage that they have to try to secure a future for us? The thinking should not be that foreign to us. We still think this way in our culture today, even though the dynamics in the culture are very different. So what does Ruth, who's been purported as a woman who loves God, what does she do? It says in chapter 3, verse 6, she went down to the threshing floor, and she did all that according to her mother-in-law had commanded her. The bath, the perfume, the cute outfit. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, that's a Bible way of saying he'd had a good amount of wine, he went to lay down at the end of a heap of grain, and she snuck in, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled, bent forward, and saw a young woman lying at his feet. And obviously it's dark. And he's like, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your wings over your maid, for you are a close relative. What does that mean? It's important to remember, Ruth is a woman of God. And Boaz is a man of God. Spread your wings over me? That's what Boaz said to her. All the way back when they first met. What did he say? He said, may the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, a God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. She's taking Naomi's plan, and instead of being manipulative and crazy and selling herself cheaply, she's making the need known plain. I need your protection. Now, she's still dressed up. She's still smelling good. She's still laying at his feet at midnight. But she's saying, we're that desperate. We need your help. And what Boaz does is something that is so cool. Here she is, vulnerable, clearly kind of, Boaz can take advantage of this situation. Ruth is putting herself in a situation where if Boaz wants to take advantage of her, he can. She's at his feet, in his bed, sneaking in the middle of the night. But what she says is, I need your protection. I need your help. Boaz, man, you know, it's one thing to be self-controlled, to be a man of God and just avoid situations, you know, where you don't want to take advantage of people and you don't want to get involved in things. And he's an older man, he's single, and he is trying to live his life God's way. It's one thing to do that. It is quite another thing to have a beautiful woman show up in your bed at night. The temptation that he would have felt here probably would have been unbelievable. But he is a man of God. He's looking at this situation despite his own desires. We're going to see he wants to be married. He is very attracted to Ruth and would love to marry her. But he doesn't want to take advantage of her this way. And so what he does in the face of this incredible temptation is he honors God. In chapter 3, verse 10, we see Boaz's response to her. He says, may you be blessed of God, my daughter. Not a hot move. He says, you have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now do not fear. He's saying, look, I can't believe you're coming after me like this. You have options, but you've chosen me. And that means something. I'm honored by that. And you don't need to do this. I'm not going to do anything to you. I'm not going to take advantage of you. I'm going to help you. And I'm going to make sure that you get what you need. He says to her, I will do for you whatever you ask. Isn't that interesting? What did Naomi say? Naomi said, you go down, get gussied up, and do whatever he asks. And Boaz, put in that position, turns to her and says, I will do what you want me to do. For all of my people in the city know that you're a woman of excellence. And it's true, I am a close relative. However, there is another closer than I. You see, part of what's at work here is there's a concept in the Bible. It's called levirate marriage, which is if someone, like women were in such a bad situation financially, if their husbands died, there was actually a thing where it's like if your brother's wife died, you were supposed to marry her in his place and keep his fortune intact, but take responsibility for his wife and his children. And if you were married or you were unavailable, then they would go to the next closest relative and the next closest relative and the next closest relative. This was part of the provision of helping to make sure that family stayed intact. And what Boaz is doing here is this beautiful, young, godly woman has just come and said, help me, which has these deep implications of marry me. And he's saying, I would love to do that. I want to do that. But God's law says that there's another person who's more closely related to you that's available, and we have to go to him first. And so they do. And he's like, no, Boaz, like, if you want to marry her, marry her. He says to her, remain this night. Stay here. Don't go sneaking off in the night. It's dangerous, and there are other men out there who might not treat you the way that I would. If this other person in our family redeems you, good, then I'll abide by that and fine. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. He says, go to sleep. So She lay at his feet until morning and rose and could, so before anyone could recognize her, because Boaz is thinking about her reputation too. And he's like, this is kind of a risky move you made here, Ruth. And I don't want people to get the wrong idea about you and think that anything happened between us. So she sleeps at his feet until there's enough light to get home, but not enough light that anyone could recognize who you were. He says, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. She lay at his feet until morning. He didn't take advantage of her. She didn't press the issue. They were going to do this God's way. Basically, Boaz is a spiritual stud. This is one badass man for God who wants to do right by the women in his life. He's kind to her. He's respectful to her. He protects her reputation. He doesn't take advantage of her. He is looking out for her needs above his own desires and her reputation. And he puts the word of God before anything else. And somehow he makes it through the night with this beautiful woman who's kind of offered herself up, sleeping at his feet. The question to you single ladies I would like to throw out there is, would your boyfriend do as much for you? That's the kind of man that you want. A man that's going to watch out for you, a man that's going to care about you, he's going to care about your reputation, and he's going to not want to take advantage of you. Not that you're not strong in your own right, not that you don't have, you know, you're not in the situation that Ruth was long ago, but still, you want somebody who's going to put God first and you second. That's the ideal situation. And then he'll put himself third. That's what Boaz did. He followed the laws of Israel. He redeemed Ruth from poverty. He did marry her. He proceeded then to take care of Naomi as well. Naomi, who had this whole other plan and her whole life had been plotting and scheming and trying to figure out how to take care of herself because she believed no one else would ever do it, runs into Ruth, who puts God first and all of their needs get met. Ruth and Boaz go on and they have a son. His name is Obed. Obed has a son named Jesse, and Jesse has a son named King David. David would have many sons and go on for generation, generation after generation after generation, and his great, I don't know how many great grandson of David, his name was Jesus of Nazareth. Ruth, the Moabite woman, had faith and got grafted in literally to the family of God. She is Jesus's great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, and she got to be a part of God's plan to save the human race because she did things God's way. And so did Boaz. That's why I love this story. It's filled with wisdom and knowledge and hard truths. Things that are hard to live out. When your livelihood is on the line, your happiness is on the line, your heart is on the line, it's so easy to want to take shortcuts. It's so hard to do the right thing and trust that God will come through. But he does. He does. You know, I'm more of a Moabite. Like Ruth, I didn't come to know the Lord until I was almost out of high school. I had no Christian background. I had been sexually active in high school. I had all kinds of damage. I came to the Lord. I didn't know what to do. I was in college. I had no clue. The idea of dating terrified me because I knew how to do it in the world. And I knew that that wasn't what you do when you're doing things God's way. And I was terrified. I didn't date for 3-4 years after I became a Christian. I tried to have like healthy friendships, but I just knew I was damaged and the way that I did things was not going to be helpful. And I was also terrified. I was terrified because I felt like if I ever started dating, I would screw it up and I would hurt somebody and I would be selfish and I didn't know what to do. And I felt like I was so damaged, like I didn't even want to think about like trying to be like Boaz. I didn't think I could do it. After 3 or 4 years, I developed a friendship with a young woman, and she happened to be the daughter of the senior pastor of this church, who also happened to be my mentor. And I got real scared because, you know, I had this weird dynamic of this relationship. He had invested so much in me, and now I was becoming friends and maybe more with his daughter, and it was getting weird, you know. And then I was thinking, if I'm going to date her, God, that's the last person you want to screw this up with. And I remember talking to him, and I didn't tell him it was about her. I just said, I'm thinking about dating. I'm scared. I kind of don't trust myself. I feel like because I want this must mean that it's bad. And he was like, oh. That's asceticism, man. Like, you're just beating yourself up like a monk with a whip. Like, just because you want something doesn't mean it's evil. And I was like, does that include your daughter? I found out later that he knew that she liked me and he knew who I was talking about. I got set up. It was a trap. The results, though, have been 25 years of marriage. Great kids, great life. Not without hardship, not without difficulty, not without weird stuff. And I remember being on a date and trying to hold her hand for the first time. Now, this is somebody who had all kinds of experience, but it had been years, and the way that God can heal you and restore you, I was just as scared to hold her hand as the first time I held anyone's hand. And it was like something had been reset. And there was a part of me, the old part of me, that was looking at me, and like my inner monologue was, are you kidding me? Are you that much of a coward? Like, this should be fine. This should be easy for you. And the idea of holding her hand had me almost trembling. And then I rejoiced, because I rejoiced at the fact that God had healed me and he had reset the clock in me, and that what I had been wasn't who I was anymore. And we want that for you, for all of you. This is God's way. It's different. It's crazy. It doesn't feel intuitive, but it's right. Naomi versus Ruth is the important study here, I think, in the book of Ruth. Naomi kept doing what was right and strategic and what she thought would get her what she wanted, which was safety and security, which is something that everybody would want. But she kept digging her hole deeper in her life. She got married, she moved to Moab, she lost her husband, then she lost her sons, and her choices made sense. But it just made things worse and worse and worse. Because she was saying, don't call me lovely, call me bitter, because God has dealt bitterly with me. As opposed to saying, God, I'm going to throw myself into your arms, and I'm going to trust you, and I am going to do things your way from now on. Now, fortunately for her, she was connected with Ruth. And that's exactly what Ruth did. And Ruth was even able to elevate Naomi as she followed after God's way, found a godly man, lived a godly life, and was used by God in an incredibly cool way that saved us all. Naomi did what she thought she wanted, and Ruth showed her a different path. The takeaway here is friendship, love, togetherness, super important. It's super meaningful. The Bible doesn't say anything about dating. But it says a lot about character. It says a lot about men and women, how we're supposed to relate to each other. And I think Ruth and Boaz have a lot to offer us. The book tells us a lot about enduring suffering together. Ruth and Naomi decided they were going to be together. They were not going to split up because of hardship. They did hard things. They went through difficult circumstances. You know, Ruth loved God and she was following God, but she was still starving. She still went to a land that she didn't know. They still spent weeks and months out in the field without knowing whether they were going to have food or clothing or shelter or protection. I think, you know, what I really hope the men will take away from this is this. Are you the redeemer of the women in your life? Are you honoring them? Are you protecting them? Do you have the same respect for your wives, your girlfriends, your sisters, or your daughters that Boaz does? You're in an incredible position to be of help. And too many in our culture take advantage. Are you a protector or a user? God wants you to be a protector. Also, if you're single, what kind of woman are you seeking? You have some Naomis knocking at your door? Watch out. What you want is Ruth, a woman who loves God, a woman who has proven character. Her past doesn't matter. Her present attitude toward God is what matters. You don't want to end up with a Naomi. For the women, too, I would say, you know, do you have faith that God will provide? I know it can be incredibly hard. It can be incredibly difficult. You know, dating for you guys, I'm sorry, it sucks. Like, I'm watching what you guys are going through with social media and the apps and the dating thing, apps and all that stuff, and oof, no thanks. In the old days, it was different. You just took a risk, and you either got rejected or, you know, things worked out. It's really hard. I get it. But trust yourself in God. Build your character, build your heart, build your reputation as a man or a woman who loves God. And I promise you, everything else will work out. Don't seek to get your needs met in the most expeditious way possibly. That will just dig a hole. What are your priorities going to be? God, family, survival, or something else. And don't settle for less than a Boaz. The final part of this story is this. God is the ultimate redeemer. He's the one that makes all of this possible. You don't get a Boaz without the God of the Bible. You don't get a Ruth without the God of the Bible. That's not what happens. And we can seek refuge under his wings. That's what he wants. It's a terrible, horrible, diabolical, broken world. And God says you can be out there like Naomi, trying to make your own way, or like Ruth, you can come to a land and a people that you don't know, and you can worship the God of the Bible and be brought into the family of God, as it says in John 1, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God, even to those who believe in his name. Ruth became a child of God because she believed. And so can you. If you're tired and you're broken and you're feeling like you've dug a pit and you don't know how to get out, Jesus Christ is the answer. It won't change overnight. It won't make everything perfect. There'll still be plenty of room to screw things up. But if you trust him and grow in him, you will find wholeness, purpose, meaning, community, connectedness, and eternity. That's what I've got. Thanks, God, that when we trust you and put your ways into action, we learn and we see that they're true. that you're a God who keeps his promises, and that you're a God of love and a God of mercy and a God of compassion. I just pray for anybody here that might be suffering and feeling hopeless and feeling disconnected and feeling like they dug a hole that they may not ever get out of. I just pray that they would trust you and turn to you, ask you into their lives, and open the door for the new kind of life that you want to give us all. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.